how the Crosstown Shootout became a throwdown. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. Along with me today is my co-host and Vice Chairman, Chuck Michaels.
Glad to be here, Barry. Interesting topic.
Yeah, it is. And the reason why I want to talk about this, first of all, I want to introduce that we have a special guest with us again today, Dr. Mark Hamilton, who is Professor of Philosophy of Sport at Ashland University and also the Chairman of the Board of the Institute for Principled Policy. Mark, thanks for joining us again.
Good to talk to you, and Barry and Chuck.
Good to talk with you as well.
I'm glad that we're all talking together. If you followed us at all when we're talking about a lot of issues, we're not just talking in the political realm. We're talking about the principles and some of the policies that happen in relation to other areas of our lives, especially every time we have Mark on in the sports world. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you were paying any attention over the last weekend, you'll have heard, even if you don't follow sports at all, because it hit the news wires and it's been across the pages of newspapers, that there was a fight where a basketball game broke out. Well, no, actually, it was the other way around. It's called the Crosstown Shootout. It's the Xavier University and University of Cincinnati, both schools in southwestern Ohio, both colleges, Division I colleges. And every year they have what's called the Crosstown Shootout, where those men's basketball teams get together for basically not only bragging rights, but usually with both of those teams, rankings within the top 25 of college sports, although I'm not sure if either team's in the top 25 right now or not. But Xavier and Cincinnati both have had some storied basketball teams. They've played in the NCAA postseason. Well, on Saturday night, I believe, the two teams got together for the continuation of this rivalry. And things were going pretty well until about 9.4 seconds left in the game, when all of a sudden a brawl erupted between players on both teams. Xavier was leading Cincinnati at the time, 76-53. But during that entire game, tensions had been rising between the two teams because of words that players were shooting back and forth to each other, and attitudes were increasingly getting more hostile. And at 9.4 seconds left, players erupted from the bench, and an all-out brawl then took place where, as of this recording, at least four players have been suspended for up to six games apiece, and there may be more suspensions and actions coming from the universities themselves, from the conferences where these two teams play, from the NCAA itself, and yes, we found out today while we're recording this, there could be potential criminal penalties being brought by Hamilton County Prosecutor Joseph Peters, because these schools were playing in Cincinnati, and so he has the jurisdiction there. Mark, can you give us a little background on this? I mean, what would bring these young men who are there, most of them probably on a scholarship, playing basketball, which they've probably been given great talents by God to play, why would we erupt into a massive melee here where people are now actually possibly facing criminal penalty?
This is a hard question, a very important event to talk about. This was one of the worst acts of violence in college basketball history, and certainly the NCAA will get involved in this, as will both universities, both Cincinnati and Xavier universities have dished out some penalties already. I expect the NCAA to do a thorough investigation and that there could be further consequences as well. The idea that there could be criminal charges also becomes a significant factor. And if anybody was severely injured, then there could also be civil issues that also might arise. In the history of sport, there have been numerous times where civil cases have been the result of a brawl or a melee in a sporting event, but very seldom do they call in outside authorities. We have allowed athletes in the context of the heat of the moment, in the context of the game, to get away with things that no one would be allowed to do on the street. We've seen it in football. We've seen it particularly in baseball, hockey, and basketball. Many years ago when Kermit Washington slugged Rudy Tomjanovich, that ended in a civil suit, as did Juan Marichal's clubbing of John Roseboro in a professional baseball game with a bat. But the issue of violence on the court, the violence in the middle of a game, violence in basketball where nobody's wearing any protection, is a devastating event, and in the college arena, this presents many, many, many issues. Why it would happen? Part of it is because we have a generation of undisciplined young men playing a very physical, and we shouldn't underestimate the physicalness of a college basketball game, very physical sport, a very emotional sport, with a very emotional crowd. We have allowed our crowd to become very involved in our games, and because of this. The emotions run high, and a little bit can lead to a lot. I think that also in the middle of this game, we have to give some concern to the officials and whether they had let the game get out of hand earlier in the game. But these young men are responsible for their actions. Now, is it criminal? That's for others to decide, but I think that if we begin seeing more prosecution of events in sporting contests and not let the games just monitor themselves, then I think we would probably put a quicker end to all of this. But in this situation, it has presented to us problems that those of us who work in college administration will have to reflect back upon and say, are we letting our games get out of control? Are we giving the fans too much influence? Are we allowing our players to get too emotionally worked up? These are questions that each institution will have to deal with.
Yeah, you know, you're right, Mark. And just to put this in perspective, one of the players for Xavier University is a young man by the name of Tu Holloway. Young Mr. Holloway has been very, shall we say, candid about his feelings leading up to and during this brawl. And I'm going to quote this, and this is coming from the news media. He was quoted as saying, basically, that's what you're going to see from Xavier in Cincinnati. We, talking about the Xavier team, we got disrespected a little bit before the game. Guys calling us out. We're a tougher team. We're grown men over here. We've got a whole bunch of gangsters in the locker room. Not thugs, but tough guys on the court. And we went out there and zipped them up at the end of the game. Unquote. Now, I'm sorry, but what he's just revealed is things were happening before the game even started that the two coaches, Mick Cronin, who is the coach of Cincinnati, and Chris Mack, who's the coach at Xavier, should have been keeping an eye on and possibly made sure that that was defused prior to the tensions of the game itself. And what looked to be, from all news reports and all media reports, was a pretty solid handling of Cincinnati by Xavier throughout the entire game, that something was going to happen. And, of course, something did. Words were exchanged, and the initial reports are that Mr. Holloway and another member of the Xavier team went over to the Cincinnati bench right before that 9.4-second mark and said some things that caused the bench to clear and the melee to start. Now, Mark, I guess I got to blame a little bit of these two coaches who should probably have had a better handle on this, and possibly even the officials who, I know they have to pay attention to the actual action on the court of dribbling the ball and shooting the ball and people defending each other. But if they're hearing anything out there of people, you know, starting to talk trash, so to speak, shouldn't the officials step in at some point before it gets to this?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, they should. But the blame goes further than that. The blame goes to the officials for not doing preventative officiating. It goes to the coaches for not doing preventative coaching. And it goes to the administrations who allow gyms to get so emotionally worked up that they lose control. I have been at games where fans lose control. I remember in the late 1960s, early 70s, when I was a high school student going to games when Bill Musselman was coaching at Ashland College at the time. And I remember a gym fully packed with warm-ups going on before the game, the fans in a frenzy before the game even began, and the emotions can run very, very high in a very close context at a basketball game. And yes, everybody that's involved shares a little bit of blame. Of course, coaches sometimes get caught up in the game and lose track of some of the things that would be happening on the bench. The same with the officials. But we have got to create a culture that does not allow this type of behavior. I think that if these guys only get away with 4 or 6 game suspensions, those in many ways are only a slap on the hand. There has to be consideration of further punishment, maybe even to the institutions. That's where the NCAA will come in. But I think this issue of criminal negligence and criminal prosecution raises some issues that maybe we shouldn't be so afraid of. Maybe we need to sometimes bring our law enforcement agents into the games. If we allow those who are playing in games to do things that would be criminally prosecutable away from the field, away from the game, we've had a few cases, such as in hockey, when a guy would intentionally use his stick to harm another player, where there has been a minimum of criminal prosecution. I think that we have to go that direction in some cases.
Well, and this may be one of those cases, Mark. Chuck, and I am curious to you, because I know you've heard about this as well. Basically, one of the Cincinnati players got up and threw a punch and connected with Xavier center Kenny Freese, and splitting his left cheek wide open. And you see the videos and the stills from the game. And here's this young man, and his left eye is totally black and blue, and he's got this big gash across his cheek underneath his eyeball. And he's got blood running down his face. Now, that wasn't the worst thing, because when he got hit, he fell down. And as soon as he hit the ground, another player of Cincinnati, a gentleman by name, and I can't pronounce this as well, Chiek Mboje. I'm sure probably
good luck with that.
Probably from around the neighborhood there in Upper Cincinnati, but then threw a kick to the head of Kenny Freese while he was down on the ground. Now, the video clearly captured both of those players assaulting this young man. And so my guess is that's where Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters is looking at bringing criminal penalties because of assault and possibly battery, depending on how they want to press on with this in relation to what they find when they look, when they replay all the videos. But Mark, it's just that whole thing. We're dealing with a culture now where in high pressure situations, because, and I think Mr. Holloway's quotes that we said here earlier really sum this up, we got disrespected. And so that was the excuse or the rationale for physical violence against somebody else, even in the controlled environment of an NCAA basketball game. Where is this going to end if we don't address that root issue of character?
Right, that's absolutely so. But we have to understand this is not new. Though there is a new gangster mentality out there today, and maybe we think that the culture is getting worse, and in many ways it is, this is not a new phenomena. There are always those problems in sport where violence takes over, where we go outside the boundaries of the game, where it becomes criminal or quasi-criminal violence. This is one of those situations. Probably this will become known as maybe the second best known fight in basketball history. Many of our Columbus area people who are listening may even remember that the best known of these fights occurred in January of 1972 between Ohio State and Minnesota, and the brutality of several Minnesota players decking Luke Whitty, the center for Ohio State, then stomping on him and kneeing him in the groin while he was on the ground, and the ensuing fights, the beating on Dave Merchant and other Ohio State players at that time. That controversy was the best-known fight in college basketball history. This will go alongside of it. There were no criminal prosecutions in the previous one, and I would be very, very surprised to see any criminal prosecutions in this one. What we have to recognize as well is not only are there these effects within the contest, there are the psychological effects upon the players. Luke Whitty was never the same basketball player after his injuries. In fact, he wrote about it in a book called Basketball and Philosophy that came out several years ago. Luke Whitty, who's now a pastor, wrote a chapter called Basketball, Violence, Forgiveness, and Healing, where almost 30 years after the fight that he was involved with Corky Taylor and Clyde Turner and other Minnesota Gopher players, during the reign of Bill Musselman up at Minnesota, almost 30 years afterwards, Luke Whitty got together with Corky and with Clyde and actually had a time of reconciliation. And Luke Whitty asked Corky later if he could tell the story of what happened to him. And I think our audience would be very interested in the fact that through this fight and through the effects of later in their lives, that both Corky and Luke Whitty became Christians. And it was because of their faith in Christ that they were actually able 30 years later to reconcile to one another. In fact, when Luke Whitty even said to Corky, "Can I tell others about our reconciliation? Can I tell them what happened?" And Corky said, "Only if you give them the gospel," he said in response to Luke Whitty. "For the gospel is love one another." Whitty writes, "For there is no game worth the loss of a relationship or even the potential loss of a relationship. There's no place for violence, but always a place for grace." My prayer would be that those men who were involved in this current fight will learn the lesson that the men who were involved in the 1972 fight discovered, that the only way they can find healing and reconciliation and overcoming the psychological, not just the physical effects, the psychological effects of this fight will last much longer than any of the physical harms, is through a relationship in Christ. That's the only way they'll find peace and reconciliation. These are disturbed young men who have lost perspective. We recently discussed Tim Tebow in one of our earlier shows, and in that show we talked about how Tebow was an athlete who's discovered the priorities of life. Well, these are young men who don't have the right priorities in life, and then because of that, when their livelihood, when their identity is threatened their manhood is threatened in the contest of losing a simple game, of not playing the way they had hoped to play, they become threatened at the deepest level of their being, and the only response then is the response of violence. And that is a tragedy in the sporting community, not just in our culture.
And with that, I'm afraid we are out of time. We want to thank Dr. Hamilton for being with us today and ask you to join us again tomorrow at 5:30 for more principles and policies.